Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hi, folks. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And I'm here with my terrific co-hosts, Bobby Neer and Robert. Also, I've noticed that Dave hasn't been able to make it the past few weeks, last couple of shows he missed. Robert, do you know if Dave will be coming back anymore?
I hope. Of course, you know Dave's a busy man. And
yeah, he's
doing
got a lot of
projects
going on. Yeah, he's got a lot of other projects. I kind of miss him, but I know that you do a couple of other shows with him or go into his shows. I didn't know if you knew what had happened to him.
Well, next time I talk to him, I'll mention it to him, and hopefully he'll be able to get back on or maybe leave a feedback.
Or hopefully for the next one, let him know that we miss him. Okay, and I hope everyone's having a happy weekend here. And today's episode is titled The Mind and the Matter. And I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
People.
And now, Mr. Serling.
A brief, if frenetic, introduction to Mr. Archibald Beechcroft. A child of the 20th century. A product of the population explosion. And one of the inheritors of the legacy of progress. Mr. Beechcroft again. This time, Act Two of his daily battle for survival. And in just a moment, our hero will begin his personal one-man rebellion against the mechanics of his age. And to do so, he will enlist certain aids available only in the Twilight Zone.
Thanks very much, Robert. And before I begin, I do want to welcome Felix in New Jersey, one of our loyal listeners. Thanks for being here. The Mind and the Matter is the story of Archibald Beechcroft, an insurance company employee who hates people and everything about them. He hates how they crowd him and push him and shove him on the subway and on the elevators. He hates working around them. He's just miserable. And one day, Henry the office boy, who had spilled coffee on him earlier that day, sits with Beechcroft at lunchtime in the cafeteria. And Henry gives Beechcroft a book about mind control titled The Mind and the Matter. Beechcroft reads it and discovers that he can make things happen simply by willing them to happen with his mind. He starts by making his landlady disappear when she shows up at his apartment asking for rent. The next day, he wills all the people to be gone. He's now alone, but he's also now bored. So he then decides that he'll bring the people back, but he's going to make them all exactly like him. And they all looked and acted just like him. And even Beechcroft realized that he couldn't even live in a world full of his miserable self. So this whole time, he's being talked to by his conscience, who usually speaks to him through mirrors and through the reflection of his eyeglasses. And his conscience makes him realize that he has to put everything back the way it was, which he does. And then Henry the office boy walks by Beechcroft and once again spills coffee on him. But this time, Beechcroft is a bit more tolerant. And when Henry asks him how he liked the book, Beechcroft simply says it was interesting, but he didn't get anything out of it because it was mostly a lot of pap. Yeah, well, I feel the same way about this episode, this particular episode. Not a lot of pap, but a lot of crack. The Mind and the Matter is without a doubt one of the most ridiculous and insipid Twilight Zone episodes. The first time I saw this episode many years ago, I shook my head in disbelief. I shook my head then, and I still do now. Because I'm not sure what Rod Serling was thinking when he wrote this episode, but my guess is that perhaps he needed an outlet for his humorous and silly side, and this episode sure fit that bill, except that it wasn't very funny, and I think only Rod may have been laughing. Because face it, look, who among us at one time or another hasn't become frustrated by crowds, noise, klutzy coworkers, pushy strangers, and the overly populated world in general? Who hasn't longed for a little extra solitude every now and then? But we don't wish away the world, for God's sake. I'm glad that Archibald was so dedicated to his job that he went into the office to do his job for nobody. I mean, who was he doing the work for? Whoever's fired
him. I can understand that, Lynn. That's basically a routine thing that, you know, if the world came to an end, until you shake off that routine, I think that's something that most people will do. They'll do something that they've done every day. You know, I would probably go to the office or go clean a building that I do right now. But after a while, I get tired of it and shake it off. So I think that's
why. So you think that maybe he just wanted to go into work for a couple of days just to feel what it was like to just go in there and be left alone.
Probably,
not have to deal with the
that's
crowd. Yeah, because that's the only reason I can think of that he would go in there and, you know, sit down at his desk and work with nobody around him. No one, who's going to give him his paycheck? Who's going to pay him? What's he doing the work for? I'm thinking that mostly it was because he wanted to feel what it was like to get on the subway with no crowds, get on the elevator without somebody pushing him, go in and sit down at his desk and work with nobody to answer to and nobody mumbling in the background. So I'm assuming that would be the only reason because, you know, he didn't even need a paycheck because now he had total control of everything. I mean, if he wanted groceries, he could just go in the store and take them. He didn't have to pay for anything. Who was going to stop him? But the problem is that he had to realize the stores are eventually going to run out of food. And now there was no one to replenish the supplies, and everything was going to stop at some point. Everything was going to run out. No electricity. There had to be somebody to operate the utility companies. So
it'd be a long time for it to run out of food, Lynn, because what's the population there? I mean, you know, and how many stores and everything. And if you're by yourself, you got all that food, it's going to last you a good number of years. Yeah.
But then he needs
But he could move the train himself, too, because that's the one thing he learned from the book. So.
Right. Remember he said, well, let's get going when he got on the train?
Yeah.
He said, well, let's get going, and the train moved. Because that's one thing Bobby and I were saying, well, who's running the subway car? But then, you know, he gets on the train, and, you know, I said, oh, that's right. Bobby said, that's right, he wills that to move. But, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of food, there's plenty of stores. But, you know, then you've got to remember if he gets perishable things, if there's somebody running the electricity, the utility companies, his refrigerator's eventually going to crap out, so you better get stuff that he's not going to have to heat up or keep cold. But, you know, I mean, he didn't think about that stuff, and I guess because he thought maybe, you know, as you said, it's going to take a long time for everything to run out, which it probably would. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it crossed his mind, maybe it didn't. But I can certainly understand that he wouldn't want to live in a world full of himself, so he was smart to give up that idea. I mean, he was a very miserable person. And the casting of Shelley Berman in that role was a good choice. But the part almost went to Joey Bishop. According to his agent, Bishop wanted very much to do a Twilight Zone episode. But when the script for this story was ready, Bishop was unavailable because it was one that he was being considered for, but he was unavailable, so the part then went to Berman. But, of course, later on, Rod Serling did say that he wrote the script with Berman in mind, like they had considered Bishop and may have thought of giving it to him, but he wasn't available. But I don't know. I was never a big fan of either Shelley Berman or Joey Bishop, so it wouldn't matter who got it. I wouldn't have, you know, care for either actor, but the story itself, I'm sorry, just, you know, I just never found Berman funny, and the story itself was absolutely terrible. But, you know, the role was perfect for Shelley Berman. It really was. So he did well with that role, even though I'm not a fan of his. He did well with the role. But it's a dumb and silly episode on so many levels. I never enjoyed it. You know, my father used to jokingly say that mind over matter meant that if you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Well, I do mind this episode. It matters to me that I had to sit through this simple-minded piece of dribble. And I usually leave the room when this one airs, but, you know, it's not worth my time. So my rating for this one is a 0 for lousy, unfortunately. But on to you, Robert.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. Before I go on, I want to ask you, how would you rate, okay, separating the actor from the story. Now, this is what I did in my review, too. And just to mention that this did get a lot of talk on our boards when we brought this up for review. How would you rate the story itself? Forget the person. The whole idea of just, you know, the Omega Man type situation, being by yourself, not having no one around. being able to move things with your mind, you know, the whole thing, you know, the genie in the bottle, the book being the genie in the bottle type thing. How would you rate the story separately?
The story
if it had
was,
a different actor. Say if you had a better actor portraying a role of
like
the
say
same
Burgess Meredith or
yeah.
somebody.
Right.
I'd probably give it a 1.5 to a 2.
Okay.
Possibly, because you know the actor does have a lot to do with it for me, and I'm just I don't care for Shelley Berman at all, so that had something to do with it. But if the character or the actor were more likable to me, I'm probably a 1.5 because I do think the story was kind of silly, but I would give it a 1.5. And
okay.
Felix
yeah.
says it wasn't up to Rod's standards, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah, it is a weak story, but I feel it did have some substance. It's just the actor itself. Also, I want to mention real quick before I go on here, my nephew, who goes to Brookhaven here in Columbus, Ohio, Brookhaven High School, his band is in a competition to get votes, and it's put on by Glee called GleeGiveANote.com, and $4 million is offered to first place. There's 3 prizes. But my nephew asked me, Victor, if I could announce that, go to the site and vote for Brookhaven High School.
Sure.
1 vote a day, and voting ends November 7th. So.
And what is the website again?
I'll go ahead and type it up in the chat here while we're
Great.
Doing the show, and then they can
Absolutely.
Go to the site and place
I'll
the
be,
vote.
I'd love to vote. Sure.
Okay. I brought an expert with me today to give their opinion about how they felt about this episode. So, Mr. Horst, how did you feel about this episode?
No, sir, I didn't like it.
My sentiments exactly. Thank you, Mr. Horst, for your opinion on today, the mind and the matter.
That's the horse from Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
No, sir. Didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
I love
Red
that
and Stimpy's horse. I love that. No,
well,
sir.
We had to add some kind of cheer to this show because, frankly, this is just a sad episode. And it's not so much the story. That's why I asked Lynn at the beginning, as it is the actor. Now, I personally have not seen him in other stuff, so I can't judge his acting ability in other, you know, stories and episodes and stuff like that he's done in his life. But, you know, he may have been the right person in the world, but I just hate him. I just totally hate the person that, you know, Shelley Berman. I hate him. And because of that, I think that's what destroys the story itself. I mean, frankly, if I could separate the story from the actor, I would give the story about 2.5 or 3 because the concept and the idea is great. You know, being able to move things around. The book is the genie in the bottle in this episode. You know, his thoughts is his wishes. So basically, that's what this whole story is about. And also, you know, we get looks at from the 3rd season, episode 73, It's a Good Life, where he makes the landlady disappear because, you know, he don't have the money to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
We also get the Nervous Man in a $4 room, first season, episode 39, where or second season, episode 39, I do believe, isn't it? Second season?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he's talking back in the mirror. We get this,
you know,
the
I
same
thought of
thing
that.
With him talking.
I thought of that,
yeah.
too, when I was watching this. I said, that reminds me of Nervous Man, you know, with the mirror, the alter ego, the conscience talking back
right.
to him. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, the wish one, the landlady disappears. Wish two, you know, he goes to the train station, wishes everybody away. Wish three is the most stupidest one he could have think of. Where why would you want a whole world, or it's another thing, we don't know if this affected the whole world or just this one area, you know, the city where he's at. I mean, why would you want you know, millions of you? I mean, it's totally stupid. And he realized that after. And what kind of throws it off also is one of the guys in the elevators was wearing a mask. You could see the mask wasn't completely fitting the face correctly.
There were a couple of them. Yeah, you could see them coming off the elevator. The masks were terrible. They were so obvious.
It breaks the illusion of the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, I would have felt better if we had different actors like Burgess Meredith, William Shatner, Robert Redford, Robert Wagner, you know, anybody but, you know, the guy that did this. So.
Well, the only thing, though, you need somebody that's like a miserable type of character. Like Robert Redford and Shatner were too likable, too good-looking. You need somebody that's like miserable. You know, somebody that hates people. And you have to get somebody who's curmudgeonly. Like Burgess Meredith could have pulled it off. He could have pulled it off, even though he's a lovable character. He could have pulled it off. Remember the one thing about machines, Bartlett Finchley,
right?
Guy who hated all machines. He was perfect for that role. He had that miserable way about him. You need someone miserable.
Well, this is what was the annoying part, and let me give guys and everybody out there a sample of that.
People. If I had my way, here's how I'd fix the universe. I'd eliminate the people. I mean, cross them off. Get rid of them, destroy them, decimate them. And there'd only be one man left, me, Archibald Beechcroft, Esquire.
You are quite mad, Beechcroft. Do you know that? People.
Now, who else does that with the holidays coming up, who else does that remind you of?
Scrooge.
Cabbages and sycophants and flatterers and fools. Pharisees and parasites and hypocrites and ghouls. Calculating swindlers, prevaricating frauds. Perpetrating evil as they roam the earth in hordes. Feeding on their fellow men, reaping rich rewards. Contaminating everything they see. Corrupting honest men. Like me. I hate people. I hate people.
Yeah, very much like Scrooge. One of my favorites. I like the one with Albert Finney.
Albert Finney is a musical version. Yeah,
yeah,
that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, that's basically just the scene that you heard about that was just annoying to me every time. And the thing is, in order to get the clips and stuff that I needed for today's show, I had to go back over parts of Mind in the Matter. And it's so bad that I don't watch the whole thing. I just watch certain bits and pieces that I needed and totally avoid the like, you know, Lynn said in her review, she just walks away or turns it, you know, when it's on or whatever. I just ignore it because this is one of the ones I just, ugh. But, I mean, it bring up so much. Even the one thing I mentioned was the X-File scene where Mulder wishes for world peace, which is another stupid thing. But here's that one.
You know, I think I'm beginning to see the problem here. You say that most people make wrong wishes, right?
Without fail, it's like giving a chimpanzee a revolver.
This is because they make their wishes solely for personal gain.
Could be.
So the trick would be to make a wish that's totally altruistic, that's for everyone. So, I wish for peace on Earth.
Peace on Earth. That's it.
What's wrong with that? You can't do it?
No. I can. It's done.
I guess I should have seen this coming! Hello? Hello? Jeannie? Jeannie, whatever your name is?
Yes.
What is this?
It's what you asked for. Peace on Earth.
You know that's not what I meant.
You didn't specify.
This has nothing to do with specificity. I mean, you don't have to wipe out the entire population of the whole planet just to effect a little peace on Earth and goodwill towards men.
You didn't say goodwill towards men. So you expect me to change the hearts of 6 billion people? No religion in history has been able to pull that off. Not Allah or Buddha or Christ. But you'd like me to do that in your name? So what? You can feel real good about yourself?
Yep. So that's pretty much how I felt about this episode. I gave it a 1 out of 5. Just as the fact that the story could have been something, but the person portraying it, I didn't care that much for. So.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and pass it on to Bobby.
Well, I don't really care who's in it. I think it's a piece of junk, so I couldn't care less who's in it. It's the same old story over and over and over again. We've seen this too many times in the series. It's the same character, different name, different story title, different year, different season, but it's the same old thing. Every single character in the Twilight Zone who gets what he wants, whether it's money or power or fame or whatever it is, always goes one step too far and ends up regretting it. And after you've seen that 2 or 3 or 4 times, the story offers you nothing because you know where it's going, you know how it's going to end up. He's going to be sorry, he's going to get what he deserves, and so there's nothing to wait for. And really, if there's anything that really disturbs me about this series, it's that, because for a man like Rod Serling, who had a wonderful imagination, especially in when it comes to TV, to be revisiting these stories over and over again is really rather disturbing. Because I realize that he's did the teleplay, that they're based on stories other people have written, but he's seen all this before, and he surely knows he's done this story. Whether it's, you know all the stories, the couple with the genie in the bottle, and the guy who wanted immortality, and the 3 idiots with the camera that told the future, and all that kind of stuff. Everybody tries to make money or tries to get somewhere. Always goes too far, and they end up regretting it. So what is the big surprise? There really isn't any. And I just think it does. It may work the first couple of times you do it, but after a while, it doesn't matter. You know, the Prime Mover. That was another episode about having a unique ability and then turning into a gambler and all of that. They never do the right thing. You think that in real life somebody would get what they wanted and just be happy with it right there, and just let it stop right there. But no, I mean. If you want to get, first of all, this idiot, and nobody has any right to get rid of anybody in the world. Nobody has a right to play God. So that in itself is obscene. But even if you buy into it that far, I mean, it was ridiculous to get rid of everybody in the world. Who can't see that coming? You don't have to think for 5 minutes and realize that you're going to be the only one around. You'll be bored to death. Doesn't take much to realize that. So I think in that respect, there's nothing there. As far as who's in the story, and I would give the story a 0 no matter who was in it. But Shelley Berman, I told Lynn earlier today, and it's hard for me to believe that today in 2011, 50 years, just about 50 years after this appeared on TV, Shelley Berman is still bothering me. I mean, Shelley Berman back in the 50s and I guess the early 60s used to be, of course, he was a stand-up comic before he was an actor. And he used to come on Ed Sullivan and do this absolutely god-awful act in which he'd come out and sit on a stool in the middle of the stage and pick up an imaginary telephone and have a conversation with himself in this very whining, irritating voice. And I was just a kid then, but I absolutely hated it. And my father thought it was the funniest thing on TV. And my mother left the room. She hated it. And I was stuck there because I wasn't privileged like kids are today. I didn't have my own TV at that time. And so I had to sit there and put up with this. And now, all these years later, I'm still having to put up with him. It's hard to believe. The man doesn't go away. He's still alive. He's 86 years old. And he's still working. He's been the cable series Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's been on there for several years on cable. And a couple of years ago, he got an Emmy Award nomination. So he's still active. He's about to give up. And I, for the life of me, I've never understood what his appeal is. Actually, ironically, I found him less irritating in this episode than I did when he just came out on Ed Sullivan. This was good already compared to what I used to put up with back then. So he's still around at 86, still working, and as I told Lynn earlier, he's still married to the same woman. He's got married once in his life, and he's been married to the same woman for 64 years. I can't imagine any woman putting up with him for 64 years. It's hard to imagine that they're still mad.
Well, I mean, in real life, personality is different than what you portray on the screen anyways.
So. Yeah, well, you know what? I have a feeling that he's no different in real life. Something tells me that he's the same. And 64 years, I don't know if they probably don't talk to each other anymore, but I'm just, some people have reached their 75th anniversary if you've lived to be in your 90s, but that's a very long time. So I guess he deserves some credit for staying with his wife all those years. But other than that, I never found him funny at all. I thought his act back in his early days was just nothing. I mean, what kind of talent is it to pick up an imaginary telephone and talk to yourself? The audiences loved it. My father loved it. Everybody loved it except me. And now he's in the Twilight Zone, and it's still going nowhere for me. So this is just another lousy episode. It's really amazing. I don't know what it is about Twilight Zone, whether I just hold it to too high a standard. I suppose with other series, if a good one comes along, I'm amazed and just accepted on that level. And it's just hard to believe when you see Rod Serling either write or adapt a story that's poor like this, why he would do it. Sometimes I feel like he was burned out from time to time. Of course, he comes back later on and writes brilliant stories, as we know, and we have some coming up soon. But, you know, it's just hard to imagine a man that talented writing such a dull story. Certainly,
so you feel that the story didn't have a chance more than what I felt it did? If you separate
I don't
the
think
actor
there's
from
any
the
way
story.
No, I don't think there's any way to improve it. I mean, it's just too stupid. And it's like I said, I'm just tired of watching these characters who are convinced that this is what they want. This is what will make me happy. I'll live forever. And the guy ends up getting a life sentence in prison. And the couple with the genie in the bottle gave all their money away. And then he wanted world power. And he ends up being Adolf Hitler. I mean, you can't see that coming. I mean, just stop and think for a minute. You know, just
well. That's why I said the book was the bottle. You know, pretty much. That's what it was.
Right. Right. These stories are the same thing over and over and over again. So at this point in the series, when I see this coming, I go, "Oh God, here we go again. He's going to get whatever it is he wants, and he's going to go too far, and he's going to be sorry, and he's going to get his comeuppance in the end." Yada yada yada. It's the same old story. But Joey Bishop in this story. Oh, I don't know. I guess anybody would have annoyed me less than Shelley Berman. But I don't... you actually would have given it a 3? I can't imagine giving it a 3.
Well, the story, I would, if it had a different actor in the role. If, you know, it was something that could help the story along. I didn't feel he helped the story around. He made it annoying.
That's his stock and trade, being annoying. That's what he's all about.
Well, then he did it right.
He was terribly annoying. Well, that's it. If it were a different actor that was more, I know, that was more likable, possibly I would give it one half or two. But other than that, I can't go much higher than that.
Yeah, it just kind of lays there, and sometimes this series is kind of bizarre because sometimes the series hits low points where you get two or three stories that are very dull in a row, or I wonder about Rod Serling and whether he didn't just have problems sometimes when he just couldn't come up with anything. I mean, it's a lot of pressure in those days. They did 30 episodes a season on a series. Today they do 22. So having to come up with that many ideas, especially in a series like this, where people are waiting for surprise endings and all kinds of unusual situations, had to be difficult. I'm not saying that it would have been easy.
He had a deadline to meet.
I just don't think you should be repeating yourself over and over again. I mean, you can repeat yourself if it's a good idea. If you want to repeat stories over and over again, just pick out something good and do it again. But this just is nowhere, and all I can say is thank God he was only in one episode, and we're rid of him. And it's just not memorable. You know what? Even when they do marathons on TV, they don't really usually show this, do they? Because I don't think I've seen it in a long time.
I wouldn't watch it.
Yeah, me
didn't show it.
Yeah, this is one of those stories you don't see really very often. Thank God for that.
That's right. I usually leave the room when this one comes on. I just, you know, I can't sit through very often.
Well, that's what I would have done back in the 50s and early 60s when he was on Ed Sullivan. I just leave the room. That's what my mother did. He thought he was a very, very funny man. Yeah. I don't see that.
You know, so far, all the Twilight Zones I've seen, I never had an actor be that strong to hate as in this episode. And, you know, I've been on this show with you guys for a while, and you heard my reviews and, you know, how I said about the actors and the roles and the stories, but, you know, this is...
I can think of lots of stories I didn't like, but I can't really focus on any particular actor who annoyed the hell out of me. No, I think he probably wins the prize on this. Maybe later on I'll think of somebody, but I can't think of anybody right now who was as irritating as he was. The funny part about it is if it had been a really great story, suppose instead of Burgess Meredith in Time Enough to Last, it had been Shelley Berman, what then?
Oh, God, please.
Ooh.
Would you have felt sorry for him at the end?
That's right. No, I wouldn't have felt sorry for him. I don't think so.
Come on, die, Bemis, and end the story.
I mean, Burgess Meredith, that's right. Because Burgess Meredith had that way about him. You just felt so sorry for him. You just wanted to help him. He was a lovable character. And Shelley Berman has nothing lovable about him. I'm sorry, no.
I would have wanted him dead when the bomb went off. End story.
Pull him out of the vault.
And what if in Eye of the Beholder, instead of everybody having pig faces at the end, they all look like Shelley Berman? That would have been even more frightening.
That would have been, yes. Well, the only other character I can think of that was almost as annoying, that was almost as unlikable, that you wanted to just, you know, punch him out, you know, stick your hand through the screen, punch, was the guy from A Thing About Machines, the one that played Bartlett Finchley. He was annoying and unlikable. Oh, he was a miserable guy.
But the thing about it is, when you have a story you don't like, a story that's boring you, or that you think is ridiculous, you're gonna transfer your hatred over to the actor after a while.
It's only natural
to do that. You start focusing. You say, you know what? The real problem is I can't stand this guy. And
Phoenix in New Jersey is trying to torture us. He says, I'm going to send you all tickets to Shelley's next gig at Harris.
I just saw that. He's going to send us tickets to his gig at Harris. Thanks, Felix. Our buddy, right?
He's probably got two women holding him up with a cane in his hand probably while he's doing his act.
Spare me, please. No man ever went so far. I mean, you go to IMDb, and it's impressive. If you go to his biography, it's impressive. It goes on and on and on. I mean, he's been in everything. He's been in TV series for decades. If I didn't know who he was, I might say, this guy's really had a hell of a career. This is pretty good. It's very impressive.
Yeah, I remember Shecky Green then, Shelley.
Shecky Green.
Oh, I never liked Shecky Green either.
Shecky Green, yeah.
By the way, this episode at IMDb gets 6.5.
Oh, they're dreaming on that.
6.5. Yeah, and there's a point. Usually on most of the stories they have, regular people doing reviews. They have one professional reviewer, at least a guy who runs his own website called eCritics, and he said it's not a memorable episode, but he called it very entertaining for what it was. Well, okay.
For what it was.
it's not memorable. You won't talk about it years later, but all things.
It's memorable for what it was, a piece of crap.
It's not so bad. All right, well, that's it for me. I got to get ready because I'm going to go see Shelley Berman later tonight. So.
thank you, Felix, for the tickets. He's going to post this episode on his Facebook page.
Good. Make sure you take your Geritol and your pills and let us know how you're doing there, Shelley. Here's to you, buddy.
64 years with the same woman. God bless her. Well, it looks like that's it for us today. Now we have.
Well, let me go ahead and bring some news about a possible. Yeah, there's been talk about a possible Twilight Zone movie coming up again. And one of the shows, podcasts I listen to is called Slice of Sci-Fi. And they had some news. I'm going to try to look it up on Google and Yahoo a little bit more. But here's what they had to say about another Twilight Zone movie coming out.
SliceOfSciFi.com.
Hey, a couple weeks ago, we told you about Hollywood's idea, imagine this, to create a new big screen version of The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay.
The series this is. Now, last week, a short list of five directors could dabble in Rod Serling's playground were announced. Now, among the more intriguing names were Chris Nolan.
Lovely.
Wow.
I like
that.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Who's also really good. He did Children of Men.
Rodriguez had better be in that list.
Well, Nolan is especially a front runner for the job right now. That's according to Variety, at least. Also in the running is Rise of the Planet of the Apes director Rupert Wyatt.
What?
Harry Potter director David Yates and Michael Bay.
That's the part.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. All right. Come on.
That's the one.
I mean,
the
seriously.
One thing missing.
Wow. I know. Because I thought to myself, you know, that Rod Serling guy, he's pretty wacky and nutty, but I want to see explosions.
Okay,
that's right.
I do have to say, the last time we had a Twilight Zone movie and it involved explosions, it ended very badly.
Yes, not, Vic Morrow would agree with you, Tim.
Yes.
Oh, wait, he can.
Yes. Yes. He nods his head.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
No,
yeah,
no,
you
really
just pick up his head and nod.
Beforehand, yeah.
Oh, man. Too soon.
Helpful.
Too soon. No.
No. Too soon, I was 8.
Yeah.
There's well, a possibility. Well, there's your ass out of a guy dying. Boy, it's funny stuff.
I know.
Yeah, Michael Bay, I'm not too crazy about that. I
well,
think.
This is a very
now,
bad Chris idea.
Now,
Christopher
Nolan wouldn't be too bad.
Please
yeah,
don't
do
it.
Batman movies.
Please yeah. don't do it. Nobody should be playing in Rod Serling's playground, please. I mean, Lynn and I, Lynn, if they're true, we're very opposed to remakes, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm not big on remakes of any kind, but we'll see what this... yeah, let us know, Robert, what this turns out to be, if you hear any more news on it, because I haven't heard anything yet.
Yeah,
it doesn't work for
one
three. It doesn't... I don't care what director they get and how much money they throw at it. It doesn't work, which they've never learned, because Rod Serling won't be there. It's as simple as that. The man is dead. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be there. If he was there, it might work, but it's not going to work. They all think they can do it better, and they're not. You can't win this situation. If they dig the movie and they remake old episodes from the series, everybody, including me, is going to say, so big deal, they remade the story. If they do something new, it's never going to be. I mean, I guess it'll keep people talking about the series and get it even more publicity than it already gets, but other than that, I hate ideas like this. I think it's a ridiculous idea. They never can let it go at all.
Look at the 2000 remakes of the Twilight Zone from the 2000s.
Well,
I mean, they are absolutely horrendous.
That's too horrible to talk about.
And the 1980s weren't much better. But the 2000s, oh, no wonder it only ran one season. I mean, my God, that was just, they were the worst. And you could tell which stories they were remaking, even though they didn't give them the same title. You could tell where they stole the stories from, and they were just horrible.
Well, let's be honest about it. As I say all the time about Hollywood, it's only about the money. They see a chance to make more money. They see the Twilight Zone is back on TV. It's on cable. It's on the MeTV cable network. And it's getting its latest go-round of publicity in their Yahoo groups. And so they see a chance to make money. They really know in their hearts they can't do it any better. And when you have something that's perfect the first time around or damn close to it, you're proving nothing by trying to redo it. What is the point? What is the
exactly.
point? A big screen version means that. And the worst part about it is when they do a big screen version is they lose the focus and they start doing because they can do it because they now have digital special effects. They can do all kinds of special effects they couldn't do in the series. And that's exactly what works against it because that's not what it was about the first time. It was not exactly. about dazzling special effects. It was about the story behind it. And that they're going to lose their focus again because they're going to say, oh, it's 2011, 2012, whenever it comes out, and think of the things that they couldn't do then that we can do now. Well, that's nice. Think about the story, because that's what it's all about. Not about what you just mentioned, the mass in this awful story here. They look ridiculous, of course, but, you know, if they redid that story today, God forbid, it would look a lot more realistic. They could have 10 million people walking around looking like Shelley Berman without lifting a finger, but...
Oh, perish
no,
the thought. Perish the thought.
We'll see what happens. I'm not opposed to it being back in the news again, but this doesn't thrill me.
My look out on remakes is if it was terrible at first, and if it helps to improve a later version improves it, then I'm all for a remake.
I agree.
But if
that.
It's something that is great and does not need to be proved on, and it has the opposite effect, then that's where I'm against having a remake.
Amen. Yeah. Amen to that, yes.
About the only thing that I always loved as a kid that came out as a movie that was redone as a big screen movie later on was the original Superman. That I really liked, the first Superman.
Yeah.
That was special. So I had doubts when I went to see that. I thought to myself, you know what, I loved Superman when I was a kid. I collected comic books and all that. They'll screw it up on the screen. I was amazed when I really liked it. So that's a rare event. But, you know, who knows?
It was a good movie, though.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
It was a great movie. Good movie. Okay, well, 2 weeks from now, we are doing one of the much better episodes, Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up? And that will be on Saturday, November 5th. Am I right about
yep.
that, Robert? Okay.
Yep.
Will the real Marshall Police? I do hope that Dave can join us for that one, because that is one that I think will be a lot of fun to talk about. So I do hope we'll see everyone here for that. And as I said, again, that will be in 2 weeks on Saturday, November 5th. So if nobody else has anything to say, and what is Felix saying here? Oh, Felix said the new Steel movie looks like CGI family movie, nothing like the original with Lee Marvin. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it's not anything close to what the original Twilight Zone was, but I'm surprised that they chose that one to do into a movie, but it'll probably be interesting. But yeah, that is a great episode coming up, and we hope to see everyone here in 2 weeks. So have a great weekend, guys.
Ah.
Enjoy, and we'll see you in 2. Okay, bye-bye.
Before I play the music, let's go out on, since it's Halloween's coming up, I want to wish everybody a happy Halloween.
Yes, happy
and
Halloween, everyone.
We apologize for giving you this trick, so we decided to give you a treat. So as we go out, before I play the final music, here is a scene from one of my favorites, and of course, I imagine yours, Young Frankenstein. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah.
I am Paul Blücher.
Steady!
How do you do? I am Dr. Frankenstein. This is my assistant, Inga. May I present Frau Blücher? I wonder what's got into them.
Your rooms have been prepared, Herr Doctor. If you will follow me.
Igor, would you bring the bags as soon as you're finished, please?
Yes, Master.
After you, Frau Blücher.